Hello and welcome to the third episode of the F&M Roundup. I am Ryan and I'm here as always with Josh.
Hello.
So this past weekend was game day. Went really well. We had a lot of fun. Got to play in a bunch of tournaments. We ended up getting snowed in. It was just a really fun weekend, and we're gonna go deep on it. We're gonna talk about the decks. If you missed the last episode, we went deep on the decks and talked about which ones we were gonna play, and we're gonna talk about how they did. So we're gonna jump right in a second here. But first of all, I want to thank everybody for listening to the podcast. We've had a lot of downloads. I wasn't expecting all the love for the podcast, but thank you to everybody. If you want to get a hold of us, it's the F&M Roundup at gmail.com. It'll be posted at the bottom as well. So yeah, let's get right into it. So let's talk about, first off, let's talk about the F&M that we went to on Friday. So you played the Boros deck.
Yep.
Or the Mardu Tempo deck. Mardu that's what Tempo. We're calling it.
Yeah, we'll call it the Mardu Tempo.
And I played the Sultai Control deck. So I didn't do that well. I think I went 3-1 with the Sultai Control deck.
Yeah.
But it did not do what I wanted it to do. It was awful. There were so many times where it was just like Corsair was extremely awkward. It just didn't do what I wanted it to do at all.
And I think part of this is for control, and this is like our heavily dedicated control decks. There are some control decks that, you know, you still consider to be control decks, but will be creature heavy and can really lay on the beats, right? They can actually curve out with creatures and just beat you, right?
Yeah.
And this is not that kind of control deck. This is the kind of control deck that wins with like an ultimate from one of the planeswalkers, right?
Yeah.
And that's slow.
It was too slow. Not enough ways to protect them. And there's so many interactions that I just didn't know the right play because I don't know the deck well enough. And, like, I'm a pretty good player, but there's so many times where it's just, like, I do not know the correct line because we didn't test the deck enough. I feel like to get a control deck perfect and standard, you have to play the perfect answers to the threats that people are playing.
Yeah, knowing
the metagame helps.
Especially at like at the smaller shops and everything like that, you know all the players. You know that there are like four players who are, you know, hanging out around their shop that you're going to be seeing in the top four.
Yeah,
you're going to be playing them like, after the cut.
Yeah,
and,
always.
And, you know, you want to make sure that you have the answers for them. Like,
yep. So it's like, I just didn't like the deck. Normally, I love control decks. It just didn't feel right. There's a couple glaring things that we did wrong with it, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Corsair was awful in the deck. It was double green, so we had to warp the whole mana base for it, which meant we couldn't play any life gain lands.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of times where I just got down to four, and then they were like, soak the flames. And I was like, oh.
Yeah.
I just didn't love it. Tasker needed to be in the deck, too.
Tasker definitely needed to be in the deck. He is a great card for a control player.
So, I mean, I did go 3-1 with it, but, you know, two out of the four matches that I played were against people that, you know, were just playing not anywhere close to tier 1 decks, and I just kind of stomped them. But that's what happens when you lose your first game. So I didn't love it. So because of that, I actually didn't end up playing at game day. We swapped it out.
Yep.
So we put a lot of work into it, but we just figured we weren't ready enough for it for game day with that deck. And we were expecting like a bunch of mono red too, so it just wasn't that great. So we swapped it out. So why don't you talk about the deck that we put in for it?
Well, we built an Abzan creature build. So, you know, the kind of deck that has the great removal that you have access to in Abzan and, you know, lower cost creatures, you know, like with Rakshasa, Death Dealer, with Fleece Mane Lion, and then, you know, you're moving up the curve, you're getting to Siege Rhino and some of the fatter stuff.
Yeah.
I believe we had Sorin in the deck as well.
Yeah. We played a lot of two drops.
We did have some Planeswalkers, not all the way up to Elspeth, though.
No, I think our curve stopped at four.
Yeah.
We played four Fleece Mane, four Death Dealer, four Heir of the Wilds. We didn't play any Anafenza because we don't have any, couldn't find any before the tournament started.
For the short notice of, like, literally on like, Friday night, let's throw it together.
Yeah, Friday night at, like, 11:30, we're like, oh, we need a new deck, let's do this. And it was, like, it's a deck that we both played, so we both know it.
Yeah.
Then we played a bunch of Siege Rhinos, a bunch of Abzan Charms, Downfalls, Bile Blights, pretty much the standard, like, Abzan aggro list. Actually, one thing before we go any further, you won FNM on Friday, right?
No, I didn't.
No, you didn't?
Yeah. I lost to, an aggro-y martyr deck.
Okay.
But it...
Yeah, it was silly. You got... You 3-1 and got, like, second or something, right?
I think I did.
And the deck went well?
Well, it actually... I lost it because it didn't come together in that match.
Yeah, it just wasn't consistent in that matchup for some reason.
Yeah, well,
just
didn't draw well. It happens, right?
Yeah. Anyway, back to the Abzan deck. So, we played a couple of Sorens. We actually played Valor Stance main board, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, that card was insane.
That card is extremely good, especially when you know that when you turn two a Fleecebane, this is the biggest thing at turn two, right?
Yeah. There's
so even if the blow-up ability is irrelevant on the... On the Valorous Stance, the indestructible ability is super.
There was a lot of times where I went two drop, and then they let me untap, and then they tried to like Heroes Downfall one of my two drops, and it was just like I'll just give it indestructible and then swing for another five or whatever,
yeah,
and you're
absolutely
at four and you're gonna die really soon.
And you know that the blow up ability on it is relevant. It's really under costed, and it's not like the enchantments where if your opponent realizes you're running the enchantments and wants to throw in
like a Banishing Light, they can put in hate for it.
Yeah.
Like an erase.
That can really,
suck. Yeah. So they can get their thing back at instant speed and block your dude. Like that is a huge blowout.
Yeah.
So yeah, I really, really liked the deck. So I ended up playing it Saturday morning at the first game day that we played. And you were playing the Mardu deck.
Yeah, I was playing the Mardu deck again.
So we both got through the first couple rounds, right?
Yep.
And then we ended up playing each other, like
we
round three.
We ended up playing each other.
So we were both at 2-0. We ended up playing each other, and you drew horribly. I drew well, and I won.
Yep. And
I feel like the Mardu deck had a really good advantage over the Abzan deck, and I just drew the right cards at the right time, and you
did. It really did.
That's exactly why I won.
But having said that, I think there were a couple things in the Mardu deck that hosed its consistency, and you know, part of the reason we are playing like the Boros-centered Mardu deck is because it's more consistent than just, you know, the more general
with more
Mardu
black
builds.
In it, yeah.
Because, you know, if you're in all three colors and have access to, like, Heroes Downfall and Bioblight, like, those are great pieces of removal, and just having access to everything is more advantageous. However, you're losing a lot of consistency. You're playing more tap lands, and you're losing a lot of life.
And it's so powerful in this deck when you just go 2-3-4.
Because I remember specifically just being annoyed that I couldn't turn 5 a Wingmate Rock.
Which would have been super awkward. It would have put me under a huge pressure. Yeah.
So I think more Stormbreath Dragons in that spot
just
would
them
probably
over
be the good idea.
Yeah. Like, I really like having the Wingmate Rock, but I think... I found I sideboarded out a lot over the weekend.
Yeah.
Just as, you know, there's different things I would bring in, but I found that was one of the first cards to go in a lot of matchups. And Stormbreath Dragon would have just been so much better.
Yeah. And, you know, as awesome as Wingmate Rock is, you know, it's great because your opponent needs to potentially spend two pieces of removal to deal with it. But they can also, like, see it coming with a Thoughtseize and then just make sure you don't get any rage.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, I ended up winning that one. Was it in two games? I think it was.
I don't remember.
I think it was in two games. And then I went to the... So they had four rounds and cut to top four. So I ended up in the top four. I actually lost a game after that. But I still made it into the top four.
Like
I lost a round.
I think you lost the round before it, actually.
Yeah, maybe. Oh, yeah, because I think you got paired down against me or something. Yeah,
something funky.
So I did lose a round... with that deck. So I ended up top fouring, and I played against an Abzan mid-range build in my top four match, and it was a tough matchup for me.
I totally see that.
Game one took an hour.
I've played that match online,
it's
just
hard.
Like, the board always ends up selling out,
and then
your opponent has better swap decks, right?
He was playing Read the Bones and Elspeth, and I was playing nothing higher than four drops.
Yeah,
so
like
the board
the
would stall, and he would just have bigger things to do.
It's harder to use he's going to be playing a lot of, like, Painlands and things like this, and he's going to probably be casting the draw ability on Abzan Charm and Read the Bones.
Yeah,
so he's going to be losing a lot of life, and the Abzan deck really isn't fast enough to take advantage of that, right?
Whereas if I was playing the Mardu deck, I would have steamrolled them, I think.
Yeah, I think so too.
But so anyway, game one took an hour, and top four rounds aren't timed.
Yeah.
So the game one took an hour, and he barely eked it out. He's a fantastic player, though. It was very, very close. There was one point where I had Seed Rhino in hand, and I was attacking with a bunch of stuff, and he had a better board state, but he blocked exactly correct so that he stayed at four life, so my Seed Rhino didn't kill him, and then he swung back and killed me. We went to game two, and I steamrolled him, and then we were about to start. This was kind of annoying, actually. So the shop we were playing at played two tournaments. The first one was at 9 o'clock. The second one was at 1:30 or something. And because we went so long, before we could do game three of the semifinals, I guess, they were starting the other tournament. And they said, you have to either drop or play in the other tournament. And I really, really wanted to play the other tournament. And I was really, like, I didn't know what to do. And then the guy offered more prize money if I just conceded. So I was just like, fine, I'll concede. And I want to play in the other tournament. And I was kind of tilting a little bit because I really want the playmat. I really wanted to win. And I was a little bit worried that I was going to just get steamrolled. And by this time, it was like 2 o'clock and I was really hungry. I didn't get a chance to eat lunch. And, you know, like it's hard to play Magic when you're feeling like that. So anyway, I grabbed the Boros deck from you, scratched it together. Somehow I ended up with a 14-card sideboard.
Yeah.
For some reason, one card got lost out of the sideboard. I have no idea what happened there. But we were frantically switching decks before the next tournament because I was playing Mardu and you were playing Abzan. And do you want to talk about any rounds of that, the second tournament?
Nothing was spectacular with the Abzan deck for me. I lost to you.
Yeah,
with
again.
Yeah,
but
with the devastate, and it, like, it just, that is a devastating matchup
it
for
is,
the Abzan creature build. There's just so much that the Mardu deck can do that the Abzan deck can't do. And there's, it's like, even with like the lifelink cards like Sword and that, which are a big deal.
Yeah, I think we were playing one whip in that deck too.
The Mardu deck just tends to rain down enough removal to make those cards not
like
extremely valuable.
Like Seed Rhino is huge because like if I'm way behind in the Mardu deck, you just chump with tokens, but you can't do that with the Seed Rhino.
Yeah,
but like I just always had Chain of the Rocks or
Seed Rhino is the, you know, if you can like rhyme off like three or four Seed Rhinos.
Yep. Yeah, totally.
It's
hard to beat that.
It's hard to beat. But what's interesting with the Boros deck is, the Mardu Tempo deck, that it has, because it has the four extra answers for five toughness creatures that a Boros deck doesn't have, it with the Crackling Dooms, which you get a huge amount of value, and
they were incredibly
the two damage
good.
Even offsets the life gain that the Seed Rhino has.
Yep.
So it makes it really hard to just rhyme off Seed Rhinos and steady out the game because your opponent can rhyme off answers really easily.
Yep. And you can use like Chandra's plus one to just make an up block and just get in for billions of damage.
And with the Chain of the Rocks, it really helps you go from having, you know, like a board that's stalled out to opening it up and then starting to put pressure on with a Rabble Master or something, right?
Or gaining life with Seeker to make it really hard for your opponent to like race you.
That deck is fantastic.
We're both so high on that deck.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I ended up beating you. Actually, the first couple rounds, I think we played like round three. Round one, I played against the Frontier Siege Red Green Crazy Ramp deck. That deck, that was a super tough matchup. I found like he was just ramping out like crazy. And game one, I eked it out at the very end. I had like a Stoke the Flames and a Lightning Strike in hand, and he was at 8. So I had 7 points of burn in my hand. He had overwhelming board state. He was going to kill me in like a turn. Mm-hmm. End of turn, I stoked him, and I drew an Arc Lightning. So I got to like do the last points of damage.
And I mean, Arc Lightning, I really like that card for, because it's so dynamic. Like, you know, this deck is really working on the tempo plays, right?
Yeah, it totally is.
All the creatures are extremely, like, you get a huge amount of value when you make the tempo play and you blow up your opponent's threat and then get to attack another time. And then as well, like the flyers on the higher end are really good for once the board has stalled. You don't have to blow up their creatures. Yeah. You just play the Stormbreath Dragon and clock your opponent even more. And then if you don't have the Stormbreath Dragon, you still have the burn options.
Yeah.
And that Arc Lightning is fantastic because it's awesome as just three damage. Like, it's not too overcosted to just cast three damage.
It's because it's just like a modal card. You do whatever you need it to do.
But it's also good to knock off a bunch of Elvis Mystics and a bunch of aggro cards.
Yeah.
And some aggro,
like, every single time I brought Arc Lightning out of the board, I always wanted more. We had two in the board, and I always wanted three or four because the matchups it's good in, it's insanely good in.
Yeah, it is.
So Arc Lightning was just always good, but, let's move. So, yeah, anyway, I won that match. I played the second game I played against a red or a black white aggro-y, like warrior-y deck.
How did that work out?
So I had an insane game. So it was like a bunch of Bloodsoak champions and a bunch of like, I played Painseer and, you know, just a bunch of like rampy or not rampy, but just like fat black creatures, you know, and you just like kind of curved out steadily. It's kind of a cool deck. Game one, he got me to one life, and I got Chandra out, and he had Athreos, and he had, like, two creatures in play, and I had, like, three goblins. So what was happening is every turn he would attack with one of his guys, and I would chump it with a goblin and have to send it back to his hand, and then he would play it again. And then on my turn, I would use Chandra to kill one of his guys, and then on his turn, he would play that one, attack with the other one. I was losing a goblin every turn, but I was taking up Chandra every turn. I was at one forever, and he just drew land every turn, and I ultimated Chandra and got Stoked the Flames.
Awesome.
So it was kind of nice. But it was insanely close.
That is why Chandra is
the siege
outpost.
In that matchup, Chandra was ridiculously good.
Well, and like, what we did decide on was having a one of the outposts and one of Chandra, and then another one of Chandra in
one
the board.
Because and one outpost in the board as well.
Because having both of them...
I think we changed that a little bit. We added an outpost in the board since we talked, but yeah.
Having the options to play with both of these cards, because they're incredibly powerful.
They really are.
The thing that I found was that with Chandra in the right match, she just absorbs a hero's downfall, which isn't the best. But... she can also be steamrolled by your creature's combat stuff. Like, sometimes you'll have a board and you want to play the draw, you want to just get the draw advantage, but you know if you attack, your opponent is just going to crack back at Chandra and kill her, right?
Yeah.
And with the outpost, you can't do that, right?
Yep. But Chandra can kill creatures.
Chandra can kill creatures.
And she can ultimate.
You get more out of her. You can do more
in
stuff out
matchup,
of her.
In certain matchups, she's better.
Yeah. And especially if you're on the back foot against a faster deck, that plus one ability is
good. It was great that game.
And
against, the game.
Against a faster deck, a lot of the time when you're playing Chandra, your next couple plays are going to be fairly large plays.
Yep.
And your opponent is going to want to be trying to kill you before they can do that. So attacking Chandra can actually be a detriment to them because they want to get more damage.
Sort of like you're gaining life.
And about the outpost also, like, there's quite a few decks that don't have a main board answer to outpost.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So when you know, if you turn for the outpost and your opponent doesn't have a board state that's fairly heavy,
you draw an extra card every single turn.
Yeah.
It's insane.
It's just...
Go ahead.
I want to mention that there was a point in the game where I had... in one of my matches while playing the Boros deck, I had a Wingmate Rock with the raid ability triggered and a Stormbreath Dragon on the field, right? And I had swung, and I was putting my opponent under quite a bit of pressure, and I had
that's
the Oko Siege out for a while, and he double Drowned and Sorrowed me, and he killed them all.
Oh, ouch.
Which...
But it
wasn't
was just like...
at all. Like, it was just... I looked at that and I
it was just like, reload.
I only committed I wouldn't have made that play if I hadn't have had the Wingmate Rock in exile and been unable to play it beforehand. And I dumped it on the field because it didn't matter. And the outpost triggered again. And the next turn, it was just like, whatever, double Rabble Master.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's just like, reload.
Yeah.
It's just really reload. Yeah, it's really good. So, yeah, I played that game, and then we played, and I played played against a control deck in, like, one of the rounds. And I did this in same play. So we were trading off pieces. So at one point, the board was clear, and we both had, like, 15 land. And we were just, like, neither of us could kill each other. We were both top decking. And I top decked Chandra, zeroed her, and got an outpost siege. And named cons, and next turn drew three cards.
And that's actually kind of another awesome thing. That
yeah, it was ridiculous.
You can have two Chandras bunched up into your hand, but a Chandra yeah. at an outpost in the right mashup is yeah. actually what you want to see in your hand,
yeah.
right?
Like, that was ridiculous, because yeah. we were one for one-ing each other, and then I just started to have three cards when he had one, and yeah. he couldn't keep up with me, and then I killed him. It was really great. And then, I made it to top four. Steamrolled the guy that I played in the semifinals, and the finals played like an Abzan mid-rangey deck and just steamrolled him. Yeah. Killed him in like 5 minutes.
Absolutely.
Yep, it was great. So yeah, I got the playmat, got, you know, a whole bunch of store credit, and spent all of it on my modern deck. Yep. It was great. So yeah, it was really fun weekend. Really fun Saturday. And so we were playing at a different shop on Sunday, and Saturday here was really awful weather, so we had to go stay at a friend's house. And we played Magic, like, all evening and night.
Probably more than 12 hours of Magic.
Oh, probably. Yeah. And I decided, so we agreed that you were going to be playing the Mardu deck on Sunday yeah, at the other game store.
And we hedged on the Abzan deck again.
We hedged on it, yeah. And I didn't really want to play it. And then I decided I was going to play the Frontier Siege deck. And so I'm just going to go through how I built it quickly, and then we'll talk about the Sunday game day. So it was based on Frontier Siege, so four Sieges, played a whole bunch of ramps, so like four Elvish Mystic, four Caryatids, four Coursers, and then it was trying to just ramp into massive things. So I played four Genesis Hydra, there was a Garruk and Ugin. I needed more Ugins, I only have one, and then I played four Hornet Queen. The deck was ridiculous. It could do such broken things. Like, I turned forward Ugin, like, more than once. Turned forward Hornet Queen, like, five times. It's just incredibly, like... But the problem with the deck is you just draw the wrong half and you lose.
Yeah, and it also can be, it's soft on Wrath.
So yeah, it that. Really is. But, and, oh, man, Whisperwood Elemental.
Yeah, that'd be
a... That's a card that should have been in there.
For that.
If they try to Wrath you, then you can recover from it very well. Yeah. But luckily, I didn't play any Wrath.
And the other
but.
Thing is, like, if your opponent does have the right answers, Hornet Queen isn't yeah. the biggest threat.
Yeah, it's not.
If it's just Hornet Queen Bile Blight, well,
it needed to
you
be
still
more
have
Ugin.
Value from it, but a 2-2 Death Toucher in some board states yeah. is not enough.
I mean,
right?
And there's some number of Polycranos, Arbor Colossus, Nihilia, there was one of those.
Well, and even Ugin, like, if...
He's not a hard lock.
Yeah, there are board states. Like, if your opponent only has a Siege Rhino on board and you have a bunch of your activation for ramp, you don't yeah. really want to minus him.
Yeah, you don't. It's really awkward. You want to plus it, and sometimes you're too
you
far behind.
You want to plus it, and then your opponent, if he's sitting on a downfall, which the Abzan decks like to sit
yep,
on their downfalls.
They do.
They downfall the Ugin, and it's just like,
and
oh.
you're like, well, I have all this mana and nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
Yep. But anyway, let's talk about Sunday. Let's talk about how you did, and then I'll talk about how I did after.
Honestly, like, I was absolutely uncontested on Sunday.
You didn't lose a game, right?
It wasn't that I didn't lose a game. Like, I didn't lose a single round. There weren't really any rounds where it was at all close.
Yeah, you just steamrolled everyone.
Yeah, it was just steamroll everyone. Yeah. I won them pretty fast, too. Like,
there
wasn't a time that the board stalled. And part of this is, like, I didn't play anything that was too hard of a matchup
right,
for it.
Right, right, right.
Like,
you just
I played
got the
a
right
lot
matchups.
Of
pre-
I did get the right yep. matchups.
Happens.
And even in the matchups that were a little bit rough, they didn't get any god draws on me, you know.
Yeah, yep.
Because you can get, when you're playing the tempo deck and you're on the back foot, that's not where you want to be.
Yeah.
You can just
really
end up
not.
Spending all your resources and then have your top end get an answer, and then you're just not in a good place.
Mm-hmm.
And that never happened to me once.
Yeah. Sometimes you just run well.
Yeah.
And I mean, you had a huge advantage because the deck was really strong.
Yeah.
And the level of play was a lot higher at the first game day that we went to.
Yeah, it absolutely was.
The shops are much different. The one shop is a lot more like I wouldn't say a hardcore Magic players. I don't know, but like better players.
Serious Magic players.
Serious, yeah, serious players. Where the store that we were at had like a lot of people brought their kids and stuff to play. Like, so you won. You got the game day mat.
I did play one match against the mono red aggro deck that I wasn't at all prepared for. And it should have been something that we thought of, that there would have been mono red players. And
At that shop especially, there's lots of mono red players. So
I hedged on putting Sorin in the board because Sorin in the board, he's really dynamic. There's a lot of things you can bring him in against, and the life gain is super relevant. Yep. He only costs one black. He's not hard to play.
Yeah,
he absolutely fits in the splash of black, right?
Yeah.
And I took him out, and he would have been great to have in that situation.
Yeah, but you brought in like Arc Lightning. And
yeah, the Arc Lightning was the god thing.
They could easily get three. 3-for-1 against that deck.
And also, Arc Lightning is so good against Rabble Master. If I see Rabble Master, I'm very likely going to play Arc Lightning.
Oh, yeah. Because just the deck that plays Rabble Master always has good targets for what you want to do with Arc Lightning.
The decks that play Rabble Master, that like being like Team Amardu, Mono Red, and maybe like Jeskai, they're always going to really try and take advantage of tempo, right?
Yep.
And being able to make a play where they angle the Rabble Master and then get it in, attack with the token, and then you blow it up the next turn. If the deck's fast enough, that one freaking goblin is going to be a huge threat.
And Arc Lightning really helps you come back from that because you can tap out to do something. They can play the Rabble Master, get the token, and then you'd clean up the Rabble Master and the token.
Yeah, that's really nice.
Yeah.
Arc Lightning's just a great sideboard card. Glare of Heresy was also very good out of the board for me.
Oh, absolutely. What I liked about Glare of Heresy was against the Abzan match, if I was a little scared about them going after my Chain of the Rocks, I would switch out some of the Chain of the Rocks for some Glares.
Yeah, not as good of a thing, but like it still answers Seedrino and a lot of big threats that they're playing.
And it's Planeswalkers too.
So I had this one game where like they were playing Banishing Light, so I sided 2 Chain of the Rocks out for 2 Glare of Heresy. And I actually had them Banishing Light my Chain of the Rocks and a Glare of Heresy did.
Ah, that's awesome.
And it felt really good.
Yep.
And I was like, yep.
I know I brought in the Outer End that we had in the board against some of the slower Abzan decks.
It was good too.
Like over Stoke the Flames.
Ooh.
Because what I found with Stoke the Flames is that the stoking in the face is just the dream, right?
Yeah.
And because they're playing so much Seedrino, they have the lifelink of Sorin. Sometimes it's not there.
Yeah.
And the Utter End, you know, it hits the Seedrino, it hits all the walkers.
Yeah.
I felt like it was a broader card.
It was. It was very nice to bring in. And it doesn't die to their Banishing Lights, too.
Yeah, it doesn't.
It's better than Banishing Light in that matchup because they can't get rid of it.
I think we took Banishing Light out of the board and replaced it with Utter End. Yeah.
Like, that's a real thing, and people play that kind of hate. So that was how you did. You won the tournament very easily. You got your playmat. We cleaned up, man. We got a playmat for the first time. Felt really good. But I'm just going to talk about how I did on Sunday. So I didn't do very well. I went 3-2, didn't make top 8, which is the first time I haven't done that in like a while. But I was playing a new deck, and I was kind of playing for fun. I already won, so I wasn't really concerned about winning. But like, I mean, I always try to play perfectly. But so in the first round, I got a very tough pairing. One of the better players at our store. And he was playing, like, Abzan mid-rangey type thing. Pretty control-y, lots of removal. And so it was kind of frustrating. He just had the right cards every time. I think I ramped out into a turn 4 Hornet Queen, and he end-step Bile-Blighted the tokens, untapped, and played Seedrino. And then at some point he attacked Seedrino into my Hornet, and I had to block and still take 2.
Yeah,
then I ramped out another Hornet Queen, and he played another Bioblight. And then he, at the late game, I got an Ugin out, and then he just drew 2 Seedrinos in a row and killed me.
Wow.
And it was like, yeah. And he just had the correct answer. He top decked the exact thing he needed every time for like 5 turns in a row at the end.
You know, that happens.
Which happens.
The decks don't always come together.
Exactly. That happened. And then game 2, I drew the wrong half of my, I had to mull the 5 and just didn't get there.
Yeah.
I just didn't ramp into... I actually had a lot of ramp going on, and then I had nothing to use the mana in. I think I had access to, like, 10 mana on turn 5 and nothing to do with it. So it was kind of gross. So, yeah, I lost that one, and then I got paired down. So I got paired against, like some kid, and just... I got, like, a 26-26 Genesis Hydra on, like, turn 6 or something. Just steamrolled him. And the round after that, I played another extremely easy match and steamrolled somebody. And then I played another very good player at her store playing some teamer big stuff. And just, like, so he destroyed me game one. Game two, I mulled the 5, and I barely eked it out. It was extremely close. I know you were watching it.
Yeah, I was watching
with the
it.
Judge at the store, and you guys were watching. And the guy I was playing against made, like, tiny little misplays, not even, like, huge stuff. I played airtight, and I managed to steal that game.
Yeah.
And then the game after, he just steamrolled me again because I had nothing to do with the mana.
Yeah.
And then I played... So that was, the fourth round, and then the fifth round, I played another guy and steamrolled him.
And the other thing to mention with that deck is that it doesn't have a huge amount of stuff that's interacting with the board.
It doesn't, right? And it was really... I brought in, like, Setizen Tactics out of the board, and it wasn't even that good, but it was just... I needed something to... deal with his threats.
Because there are some really powerful combos that can happen, some really powerful plays that tend to not happen, because if your opponent just drops down a piece of spot removal, you get 2 for one.
Like, if they deal with all your little rampy creatures and stuff, like, it can get nasty. Like, there was one time where I turned forward and a Hornet Queen off of 2 mana. Like, one of it was a Nykthos.
Yeah, and
like,
I mean,
you can abuse it like crazy.
I'm sure, like, an Arc Lightning or something would have completely
Drowned Sorrow wrecks the deck.
Yeah.
But against the decks that didn't have that or didn't get that against me, I won easily.
Yeah.
Like, I got, like, a... Like, there's just disgusting... It feels like a commander deck, because you just do disgusting things. Like, I got, like, an 126 Genesis Hydra at one time. And it was like, I ultimated Ugin and dumped like 3 Hornet Queens onto the field.
Wow.
And a guy windstormed me for 2 and killed all the Hornet Queens and all the tokens.
Windstorm.
And I still won the game because I just dumped everything.
The not even limited player.
Yeah, it was hilarious. Yeah. I was playing against some like dual deck or something, but I don't know. It was a really fun deck. I don't regret playing it at all. It was really fun. I don't think I'm going to play it in a competitive tournament again, just because it's so inconsistent, and that's not the deck I like to play.
There might be ways to
it. It is powerful.
It might be like a something to make a choice for in
a metagame. Yeah,
like
totally.
A metagame choice for.
And it was playing Xenagos the Reveler.
Yeah.
And I've never used his plus one ability. I've never thought it was relevant, but in this deck, you can just ramp like crazy with it. It's super good. anyway, the deck's like okay, but... Like, it is insanely powerful if it goes off, but I don't like inconsistent decks. I like to play something like the Mardu deck that's always good.
Yeah, that Mardu deck is consistent.
Like, even if you draw, like, the wrong half of your deck, it's still good. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the top of
there is no wrong half of the deck.
The top of your deck can be really, really relevant, and you can count on hitting your things.
And, like, your 2-drops do stuff in the late game.
They really do.
And your 3-drops, which is really nice. I love the deck. Yeah, we're both super high on it. We both love it. Both rode it to victory. Oh, and something, it was really funny. So I won. I only ended up winning like one pack with my 3-2 finish. I opened Monastery of Manitar. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, we should probably build around that card.
Yeah, we should build some kind of Jeskai token deck.
Yeah, something.
So I'm sure we'll get around to it. But anyway...
You know, that could actually work
in the Mardu deck. Yeah, we didn't even consider it before. It could be, you know, could throw it in the 3-drop slot, but anyway.
Yeah, I don't know, it's,
anyway,
it's a slow card.
We had a lot of fun at game day. We both won a tournament. It was really, really fun. We love game day. We want there to be, like, it's soon before Dragons comes out, right?
Yeah, Dragons is coming
out
pretty quickly.
Soon.
It's got to be, like, less than 2 months, I think.
And then soon enough, we'll be at Dragons of Tarkir Game Day. And we'll be winning more playmats, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully.
So, so that we're going to wrap that up for Game Day. Now, we still got a little bit of time here, and we're going to shift over a little bit. So that was our standard Game Day stuff. We're going to switch over to Draft. We did a draft today. We want to talk about it because it was awesome.
Yeah. Well, actually, let's talk about how we draft on MTGO.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's do that.
So it's kind of a cool idea.
This is a cool thing that we've been doing for a while. We both love drafting. I have a Magic Online account. You have one too, but you don't use it as much.
I don't use it as much.
So what we do is we'll get together. So today we have some free time. We'll sit down and we'll do a draft together. So we'll go on my account and we'll enter the draft. And it was a release draft on Cons and 8-4. And then we sit beside each other and we talk about the picks and we talk about the plays. And it increases my win percentage a lot.
Oh, yeah.
It totally does. Just being able to talk out all the plays, all the picks, get different opinions. It is really, really cool doing that.
And, like, a lot of time in Standard, it's pretty easy to, like, look at Rabble Master and look at another turn three or, like, another three drop and be like,
I know the
Rabble Master is just better.
Yep.
But in draft, it's a lot different because you got to compare two cards that are pretty awful. And it's like, well, we're really light in this area or in this converted mana cost curve of our deck. And I think we should stick something in here. And these are our options. So what are we going to do? Yeah.
So my draft style is to stay as open as possible until as late as possible. I really, really love, like, a lot of people don't like what Fates has added to the draft format, where it's Fate double cons, because the Fate rares are ridiculously powerful, and a lot of people think that it's not fun to play with stuff like that. But, I mean, we didn't open a good rare in Fates.
No, we didn't.
And we took the draft pretty easily.
What did we get in Fates for a rare?
We didn't take
a
rare.
It was Frontier Siege. Oh, but yeah. We opened Frontier Siege
and we passed it. I've tried it in draft and didn't think it was that good. You can do some sweet things with it, but imagine drawing that when you've already played your hand. It's awful.
Yeah.
So we ended up first picking like a Wild Slash, and that card was really good.
Yeah, that card was absolutely first pickable.
Yeah. So we ended up in Jeskai. We're not going to talk about every pick all the way through, but we're going to talk about a couple. So we took a Wild Slash, and we took we got a really late Cloud Form at some point. It was like a sixth pick Cloud Form or something.
In the Fates pack, Blue-Red was really, really open.
So open. And I love that archetype. I love Jeskai coming out of Fates.
So we were picking Heavy Red, and then, you know,
we got a Sandstep.
Yeah, we got like a late Cloud Form, and then we were getting like a late picks in blue that were really powerful cards.
Yeah, we really were.
Right?
So after Fates, did we take a rare from Cons?
I know
we got like a third pick Mantis Rider out of our second pack.
Third pick Mantis Rider.
Oh, that was good.
We were solidly in Jeskai with all the fixing for it.
Yeah, we had perfect mana.
Yeah. Because we did end up going for Jeskai. However, we were
very red blue.
There was a point where it must have been in Cons that we started to commit to the blue solidly.
Yes, it was.
Because we were kind of thinking we can take the deck in a couple different directions right here.
Yep.
We definitely pushed it towards the Jeskai, and especially because we thought that red blue was
extremely open. Yeah.
But what was hilarious is in the tournament later, we played
Jeskai.
Jeskai decks.
Yeah. Two out of three rounds we played against Jeskai. We were like, what? Jeskai was open the whole draft. Like, how did
Jeskai
this happen?
Was open the whole freak. We got a turn. We got a third pick Mantis Rider
out of Cons.
Like, what?
And we got, like, I think we picked Seeker of the Way in our first Cons pack.
Maybe.
Yeah, we did. And then we got into but anyway, like,
I think we hit like a Saltai rare in our one of the Cons packs.
Yeah, it wasn't
like,
great.
It was probably Saltai.
It was Ascendancy.
Yeah,
it
was just
great.
Like, it's not worth anything.
Yep.
There's no reason to pick it, and Seeker is a great card.
It really is, especially in Jeskai.
Yeah.
And we had Sandstep, Outcast, Cloud Form. We ended up with like a Canyon Lurkers, the 5/2 that morphs, flips up for 4, which is really good. That card's awesome.
It is really good.
We also had Dragon Style Twins, which went really late.
The 3/3
Double Strike Prowess we got really late out of Cons. We got that like fifth pick or something stupid.
Did we get that late?
Yeah, we got that super late.
There was one moment where we had a Dragon Style Twins on board, and our opponent tapped out to do something, right?
Man.
We were playing one rune mark.
The Jeskai one. The best one. The blue one that gives +2/+2 in flying if you control
That rune mark was absolutely good, because with the rune mark, you can wait for the right time.
Yeah.
You can put it on like something like a Seeker of the Way, which isn't going to do a lot. And as long as you're sure your opponent's not going to blow you.
Yeah, you have to choose. If you do that into five open mana, yeah, you're not smart. You got to wait for it,
right?
Yeah.
Or you got to be on the verge of death and just throw out a Hail Mary to try and win, right?
You really do.
But even on something like with prowess or whatever, and we did have like the cloud form, which has hexproof, so you can commit to that pretty safely.
Yeah, we also had the 5-drop 4/2 with prowess and hexproof out of cons.
We didn't end up playing that main though.
I think we brought it to the board once or twice.
Yeah, we did. But so what I was trying to get out was putting it on Seeker while your opponent is tapped out makes Seeker be able to fly over all your opponent's board
and gain you like 6 life.
5 life.
5 life, yeah.
5 life.
1 prowess trigger.
It's a trigger's press. So what happened with the Dragonstyle Twin is our opponent tapped out when we had it on board, and we cast Cloud Form and the Jeskai Rune Mark onto the Dragonstyle
Twin. And it made it a 7/7 flying double strike and attack for 14.
And he had like a wall up or something.
Yeah, yeah, like an Archer's Parapet or something.
So we won that round.
Yeah, we passed the turn and still had a 5/5 flying double strike. So we won that one.
So even
he killed it, actually.
Yeah.
Like, we got 14 in, and then he untapped and killed it.
And that's the thing that you want to be really worried about with the
Because if we had done that with his mana up, he would have just killed it in response, and we would have got blown out huge.
But just doing that huge swing, it doesn't have to be that big, but it was well worth it.
Yeah, it worked out very, very well.
As a pump spell, it would have been worth it.
Yeah, totally. So that was really great. Our game one match, we played Jeskai, and we played kind of someone who wasn't playing correctly.
Yeah.
They kept playing stuff main phase before attacking.
They did. They were making a bunch of
mistakes.
It was
pretty easy to outplay them. They had very good cards.
It absolutely was.
One game, we turned 3 Mantis Rider, and it just did like 15 damage, though.
He had some good cards, but he couldn't answer the turn 3 Mantis Rider, and there is a whole lot of stuff in Jeskai that answers it.
When you do turn 3 Mantis Rider, you're in a lot of... You're way ahead. If they can't answer it, you
just win. If they can't answer it, you normally just win.
And then game two, we played against some Sultai deck that just did nothing, and we steamrolled it.
Yeah.
And then in the finals, we played the Jeskai Mirror, and that game was... It was close.
I would like to... I'm pretty sure the first game was when we got in the 14 points off of the Dragonstyle Twin and just steamrolled.
And then game two...
Let's talk about that stupid
manifest. Let's talk about
manifest.
So, we're going to talk about a little bit reading what manifest is and morphs and stuff like that. So, he turned 2 Soul Summons, which gives you a 2/2, like, it lets you manifest top card of your library.
Yeah.
We had a turn 2 Seeker, and he tacked into it. So, we're thinking he wants to aggressively trade this off.
Yeah.
And he kept attacking into our, like, 2/2s and 2/1s.
Yeah, he kept over and over again. Trades.
So, we had him on land because... Or something like a spell that he couldn't flip.
Yeah, we had him on something useless underneath the manifest.
Yeah, because if you attack over and over again like that, it kind of shows that you don't have anything because you want to aggressively trade.
Yeah. He was playing it like it was a 2-drop 2/2.
Yeah.
Which you do want to trade off before it doesn't become relevant.
Yeah, so then we waited and didn't block it, didn't trade, and then he flipped it up as 1,000 wins.
Yeah, and
which was gross.
He bounced something and
just killed us with it.
We have a lot of flyers in the deck, so it pinned us down, and we died from it. And it was especially...
It was just rough because we had him pinned on land, and he was using it so aggressively that we did not think it was anything relevant. But I guess maybe he was trying to, he didn't think he would get to that mana.
Yeah.
Because we were beating face a lot and he thought
he could have been worried about that.
But man, I think we still made the right plays with it. The way that he was showing.
We still probably didn't make the right plays.
But that was rough. And then game three, do you want to talk about this one?
Game three was just fantastic. So we picked a Deflecting Palm.
We didn't
at one point. But we didn't mainboard it.
We got it, like, really late, because it's not that good.
It can have just useless... It can be kind of useless,
and it can be insane. This is why we didn't mainboard it.
Yeah.
We had better options.
in draft, I still think it could be mainboarded, but this is what's really cool about trying to, or drafting with two people, is that there's two perspectives.
Exactly. I didn't think it's
you don't
worth
like it, and I think it could maybe be worth it, right? Yeah. So we didn't play it.
Yeah, anyway, so we had it out of the board, and man.
So we had it out of the board, and there was a point where he hit the whirlwind?
Thousand wins. Yeah, the 5-6 flyer.
Yeah.
He just hard card today.
Is quite nasty, and
it's just huge.
Falling behind. I don't think there was any plays that were really interesting that either one of us played in that match.
Not really.
But we had a Mystic of Hinway, which is great, especially because we tended to use quite a bit of removal, and the board stalled out fairly quickly in that.
Yeah.
And he had a lot of flyers, so normally we were relying on our flyers to get over his things, but he had a lot of ways to stall the board out. But Mystic of the Hidden Way would just keep going, and it was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, so we had him at 7, and he had 1,000 wins and a bunch of attackers, right?
Yeah.
And we had to use our Jeskai Wind Scout as, like, a chumper, chump blocker.
There was a point where...
So he attacked us, and he would have had lethal, so we had to chump with, like, our Jeskai Wind Scout in the air and trade off a bear for his bear or something like that, and he put us to, like, 2. And then we untapped, we attacked with our Mystic, we had nothing on board except for, like, 1 blocker left, and he had the 1,000 wins and 1 attacker.
Oh, we played a Morph that turn.
Yes.
We morphed
it was a Canyon Lurker that turn. Was a jump blocker.
Because we were a little worried about his Morph being able to flip up for that Jeskai that gives first plus 3 and first strike until end of turn.
So he attacked us with this 5-6 and his Morph, so we blocked his Morph with our Morph, and we used Deflecting Palm on his 1,000 wins, putting him to 2, and he didn't kill us, and we were at, like, 1 or 2. And then we untapped and attacked
He was top decking at that point. He had nothing in hand. And we were just like, does he have the answer? Is he going to sandblast us? I don't know. Like, we ripped a land, and we were just like, we just go for it.
Yep. So we were dead unless we kill him, and then we attacked for 3 unblockable, and we got there.
Yeah.
And, oh, man, it felt good. Like, it was close. It was very close. Like, it could have gone either way. That was a really good game. Well, I would have been fine with losing that game. It was very close.
We were angling the Deflecting Palm until the last possible second.
Yeah, we had it in our hand in, like, the first... Like, we drew it in our opening hand. We saved it and saved it and saved it until the last second.
We were on the back foot in that game, but what's really cool with that card is that you can be on the back foot, and
they don't know that you can get damage out of nowhere.
When you make an attack... And your opponent knows that if you're racing, they're going to win. They often won't call blockers because they can hit you back harder.
So we got to do a bunch of free damage.
We got to do a bunch of that. He wasn't calling blockers because he wanted to hit back, and he knew that in the end he would be hitting back harder.
Yeah.
But we had
Deflecting Palm.
We were sitting on Deflecting Palm.
As our one card in hand.
Yeah, we had it, like, open for a couple turns because we were like, oh my god, is he going to, like, trumpet last right now?
Yeah, we're terrified.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was just a great game. We got there. We won the 8-4. And, yeah, I absolutely love draft. Let's talk about draft a little bit. Let's talk about the format has changed a little bit since Fate Reforged entered with with Fate and double cons. Let's talk about how it changed a little bit.
Well, Fate's I think it's changed quite a bit. There is a lot of really good removal in Fates.
There is, like, low-costed, like, conditional
really
removal.
Really low-costed, yeah, and there tends to be a condition on it, like... It
kills Morphs, basically.
Like, yeah.
There's Douse and Gloom.
Douse and Gloom.
3 mana, do 2 damage, gain 2 life. That thing's really good. Kills Morphs.
Yeah.
There's Bathe and Dragonfire. These are both commons.
Yeah. And the commons do have a really big effect
in
because
draft,
you're going to see them a lot, right? Where
so,
an uncommon that's powerful, well, that's not going to be seen anywhere near as much as the commons are.
So Bathe does 4 damage to target creature. And then you've got, in blue, you have Whisk Away to put on top of their library.
Yeah, Whisk Away is low-costed. Yeah,
It's more of a tempo-y deck that you want that in.
Yeah.
Or a slower deck, maybe, to draw you another turn. But anyway.
You also have the Sandblast.
Sandblast, that's a big one. And that's so much better than Killshot was, because you can attack with all your guys and kill their one big blocker and not have to lose anything.
Yeah. And most of the time, the 5 damage is enough to blow up.
Oh, yeah,
up
most
the
of the time. Yeah. Pretty much always.
There's also the...
At Uncommon, there's some good ones.
Peel from Reality with Delve? Yeah, the whatever Rite that's
of
called.
Undoing?
Rite of Undoing?
It's like six mana with Delve or something.
Yeah,
it's not great, but I'll play one.
Instant speed Delve, your opponent bounces a creature, and you bounce a creature.
Well, you return one of their creatures to their hand, and you return one of yours to your hand.
Yeah, that's a better way to say it.
It's Peel from Reality, but with non-land permanence.
Yeah. Oh, and it is, non-land permanence. There's Will of the Naga, which is really, really powerful.
Yeah, tap two guys, and they don't untap.
Yeah.
It's really good
with Delve.
It's like
on
six
it.
Or seven or something, but it's really good. And that's Uncommon,
not really removal.
Yeah, at Uncommon, there's like the Shock. We had it in our Wild Slash. We had it in our deck. It was fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic.
Burn spell, and it kills morphs. And there's also Pyrotechnics, which is just
Pyrotechnics
nuts.
Is overwhelming.
Do four damage to whatever you want. Split it up however you want for five mana.
Yeah.
So there's lots of good removal. Also, another thing about Fates is the rares are ridiculous. They're so powerful. Like, two-thirds of the rares, you just instantly first pick.
Yeah.
And there's also a huge gulf between the commons and uncommons. Like, there's some bomb uncommons.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, Elite Scale Guard, that guy that bolsters when you enter the battlefield, and he, whenever something with a counter on it attacks your opponent, they have to tap down a creature.
Yeah, that's...
It's just nuts.
You can win a game pretty
very easily.
Okay.
At the pre-release, I had that and the Dragon Scale General, the rare that at the end of turn you get to bolster.
I'm sure that's disgusting.
Yeah, I won in like two turns.
Can you tap your own creatures when, or like
no?
Well,
you have to attack to tap theirs.
It taps your opponent's. So you can't have like a creature that you don't want to attack with and attack and tap it or something.
I don't know. Anyway, it was.
I can't see why you would.
That thing's ridiculous. Yeah. And then. There's also, like, there's a few good commons, but they drop off a lot. Blue is a really deep color.
Well, for the removal, I really like the commons.
Yeah, so in red, there's, like, Goblin Heel Cutter, which is the best red common.
Yeah.
And then there's, like, Bathe and Dragonfire, and that just drops off, and there's not really much. Blue is really deep.
No.
Blue is really deep. White is pretty deep. Black's okay. I don't like green.
Is that one card with the choice, the Citadel?
Sandstep Outcast.
Sandstep Outcast.
It's the best white common, I think.
It is a common.
It's very, very good. So white's pretty good, too. But so overall, Jeskai got way better.
Jeskai absolutely
Yeah, Jeskai's a thing now.
Yeah.
Before, it was just like everyone drafts Abzan or Mardu.
Sometimes it seemed like that.
It was just like
it was still there, but it was just like
draft black white and then choose either green or red and go Mardu or Abzan. That was just what I did every draft. Like honestly, that was just the best thing to do.
I did that quite a bit.
Like if it's open, you just go for it because it's the best archetype.
If the duels are open, you go for four color Abzan Mardu.
Yeah,
combined
it's based black white, and then you get a bomb red card and a bomb green card.
Yeah, and then you just get Butcher, but you get Butcher like third pack. But you've been aware that there's a lot of good black stuff.
Yeah,
so
you've been taking red stuff.
So you've been taking the duels, so you can get into that color.
Yeah, and you just stay open as long as you can between green and red.
Yeah,
and that was such a good archetype, and now. Man, I love the Jeskai decks.
Me too.
Like, red-white, red-blue, blue-white, they're all just really good. And you can go, like, pretty much two-color with any of those combinations, and they're sweet.
And
although they do kind of lock you in to Jeskai, which is a thing.
Something that is interesting in the Fates is if you get a card like a Jute, I don't know the pronunciation.
Ojutai. Something like that, I don't know.
Or
the Vigilance guy. Dromoka, yeah. The Bomb Dragons that are in the Allied colors.
Yeah, you can try, if you get, you can, I don't know what I'm saying.
You can go into, like, Esper. Like, I played Esper, actually.
You can go into Esper, is what I'm
trying to say.
Fates,
Cons, I played Esper.
Yeah.
Which is weird, because you're not getting any of the big, like, common three-color guys from Cons, but it worked out pretty good. You know, I got to play in Esper, and it was... I got Dromoka, actually.
Yeah.
And like, I had some sweet black cards.
If you're trying to stay open, you're building, like, you know, blue-red, and then you get the black-red dragon, you know, that's a lot of incentive to go into Grixis, right?
Yes.
The blue-black-red.
Yeah. And it wasn't Dromoka that I had. It was Silumgar.
Like, I know I've made some funny color choices that worked really, really well.
Yeah, I think you played Bant one time.
Yeah, I played Bant.
Weird.
But that was in Triple
Fates. Oh, that was Triple Fates, yeah.
So Triple Fates is weird as hell.
It's really fun.
Yeah, it is really fun.
I really love it. I want to do it again. But anyway. Yeah, so I think the format sped up a little bit, too. I mean, you still get the board stalls, but there's a lot of, like, blue and white flyers that came out in Fate Reforged.
Yeah, and the removal helps
keep And the removal, yeah. So I think it's sped up a little bit. The rares are ridiculous, and the commons are not so good. But, I mean, I think it's overall made it a more fun draft format. I've been liking it a lot more than Triple Cons.
Me too. But I've gotten a little sick of Triple Cons.
Yeah, maybe that's part of it too. Yeah. But, I mean, I've drafted quite a bit since Fate came out, and I really, really like it.
Yeah, me too.
So, anyway, that's going to wrap it up for this week on the show. So, yeah, we had a lot of fun at Game Day this weekend. We ended up winning a couple playmats. And, oh, by the way, the playmats are sweet.
Yeah,
Ugin, yeah.
Probably going to have to bring out the Ugins on this Friday night.
Maybe. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. I'm totally bringing them out. Yeah. So we're actually going to be playing Modern at FNM this week. So next week, we'll probably talk about our Modern decks.
Yeah, we can talk about the Modern decks and also the modern metagame at our shop, because there is going to be a mini meta, or there's always a mini metagame at the shop. And because Modern is actually a new startup for our shop, it is going to be screwy.
And it's really fun. I love it.
It'll be fun.
Modern's great. So anyway, thanks a lot for listening. If you want to get in touch with us, like I said at the beginning, the fnmroundup@gmail.com is where you can get in touch with us. Yeah, thanks a lot, guys, for hanging out, and we'll see you next time.